Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. Absentee ballots were counted in Sitka Friday afternoon with no change in the outcome of last Tuesday's municipal election. In fact, the front runners in both the mayor and assembly races expanded their leads. On election night, Mayor-elect Mim McConnell held a 277-vote lead over the incumbent, Cheryl Westover. That increased to 331 votes Friday. On the assembly ballot, things were a bit tighter. Third-place finisher Michelle Putz held an 85-vote lead over Aaron Swanson. Absentee ballots increased that spread to 99 votes. Write-in ballots for a second school board seat were counted on Tuesday night, but the write-in candidates were not identified until Friday afternoon. As expected, Jennifer Robinson won the seat with 573 votes out of 668 write-in ballots cast. The Sitka Assembly will certify the election at its regular next meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, October 9th. The new members will be sworn in at the conclusion of old business. More cruise ship tourists visited Alaska this year than last, but some ports did better than others. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld filed this season-end report.
Susan Hess is setting up a beer tent as part of the Sitka Chamber of Commerce season-end celebration. She's co-owner of the Baranoff Island Brewing Company. The business began in 2010, so it's still figuring out the tourism market. But Hess says it's been great.
We've had a really good year. Business is growing. More people that live in the community are bringing people out to the brewery when they come to visit. We're getting more cruise ship passengers. We're getting more independent travelers. And we definitely noticed a difference in the charter fishermen that are making their way out to the brewery as well.
Sitka expected to see about 110,000 passengers this season, about 20% fewer than last summer, and only about a third of the number of visitors 5 years ago. Rough weather also canceled its two final ships, shrinking the 2012 season even more. But statewide, the passenger count grew. Industry officials say about 940,000 people sailed Alaska waters this year. That's about a 6% increase from the previous season.
There were more ships brought back to Alaska, and some had longer itineraries, maybe another sailing either in the early spring or in the late fall, and some bigger ships as well.
John Binkley is president of the Alaska Cruise Association. He says the industry's uptick involved more than passenger numbers.
Different areas of Alaska are affected differently, but I would say just anecdotally and talking to people around the state that the spending was up as well. Not only more visitors to increase the overall amount of economic activity, but also the amount that each visitor spent, I think, was a little bit higher this year than last year.
Cruise ship traffic affects most of the state. Some ships sailing through Southeast go to South Central, where tourists move to buses, trains, or planes to take them to Rail Belt or other locations. And a couple ships sail as far as Kodiak, Homer, and Unalaska. More passengers increase business on shore, but there are other factors. In Southeast, the wet summer took its toll.
Anytime, you know, somebody's on vacation and it's pouring rain, some people take that as the cue.
Tyler Hickman is vice president of operations for Icy Strait Point. It's a renovated cannery and cruise ship attraction in Hoonah, west of Juneau.
It certainly impacts retail, food and beverage, and, you know, tours. The walk-up sales that you might normally get on that type of a day just don't appear.
Icy Strait's biggest show is a mile-long zip line ride over the rainforest. It lost some passengers to the weather this year, but Hickman says whale-watching excursions went well, with sightings of pods of up to 70 humpbacks. The destination expanded its retail area this year, giving some stores more space and making room for others, such as a donut shop. Hickman says that helped make up for passengers reluctant to spend a lot of money.
I would have to say that probably the real high-end stuff was down a bit. You know, I think that spending habits certainly changed, but, you know, we were quite successful with it.
Route changes cost Icy Strait about 5% of passenger capacity this year, but another cruise ship shuffle will bring that back up next year to about 130,000. Cruise lines set their schedules far in advance. Industry spokesman Binkley says the 2013 calendar increases capacity.
For For next year, it's a combination of more ships, larger ships, and more sailings for the ships that are coming. So the combination of all that should push us right over the million passenger mark.
That's where it was about 5 years ago. Back in Sitka, locals are checking out gift shop sales and lining up for free burgers as the season's end celebration moves into high gear. At the beer tent, Baranoff Brewery's Hess says she's looking forward to next summer.
We are planning to work with another business in town to kind of have the brewery tour be part of the tour that they sell, to come out to the brewery with their clients, and just continuing to grow and increase with the production and distribution of beer, and maybe be more active in trying to get tourists from downtown to take the shuttle out there.
As a relatively new attraction, she expects the brewery to do well, but she's worried for other Sitka businesses.
There are neighbors and friends and people that are, you know, supporting us that are losing out because of cruise ship tourism decreasing.
The 2013 season begins in April when the Crystal Symphony sails from Japan to Dutch Harbor, Kodiak, and Ketchikan. By May, other ships will be cruising north from Vancouver, Seattle, and San Francisco. This is Ed Schoenfeld.
Just about every politician champions motherhood and apple pie. U.S. Senator Mark Begich is adding rubber boots to the list. Begich, who's touring Southeast Alaska, says he's heard numerous complaints about extra tufts since production moved to China. He says what he jokingly calls sort of tufts leak and the soles separate after just a few weeks of wear.
Oddly enough, when I landed near in Ketchikan, we were on the ferry coming over, and a woman sitting across from us owns a store in Sitka and actually told us about a pile of these boots that she has to send back because they've fallen apart.
The senator sent a letter Friday to Honeywell Corporation, the New Jersey-based manufacturer of the popular boots. It protested the drop in quality and the loss of 250 to 300 jobs at the Illinois factory where extra tufts used to be made. Begich says his effort is similar to the congressional protests against American Olympic uniforms and Air Force gear made in China.
When you think of things like extra tough or our military boots, you know, these are pieces of equipment that, you know, take a lot of wear and tear, and there's no better country that knows how to build things.
Begich says extra tough manufacturer responded quickly, and he hopes to talk to them soon. An email from Honeywell spokesman Bruce Eric Anderson says the company has heard complaints about the boot's quality. He says it's reviewed and strengthened our manufacturing processes to resolve the issues. The state of Alaska has the only remaining legal challenge pending against a nationwide ban on logging and road building on roadless forest lands. That's after the U.S. Supreme Court decided last week not to hear an appeal on a lawsuit brought by the state of Wyoming and a mining industry group from Colorado. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The 2001 federal rule prohibits new road construction, reconstruction, or logging on large undeveloped areas of national forest land across the U.S. That includes parts of the Tongass and the Chugach National Forests here in Alaska. The U.S. Supreme Court this month decided not to hear an appeal of a Tenth Circuit Court decision upholding the rule. Tom Lenhart, an assistant attorney general with the state of Alaska, says the decision doesn't have a big impact on Alaska's challenge.
First, it's important to recognize that all they did was decide not to hear the case. So they didn't look at the merits at all. There's no precedent in terms of the merits of the case. What it does is it lets the decision stand by the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals. Certainly it's a decision that we're disappointed in. However, in terms of the state of Alaska's case, which is in the District of Columbia, it really doesn't have very much of an impact.
The state of Wyoming and Colorado Mining Association argue that the rule creates wilderness areas and national forests, an authority reserved for Congress. The state of Alaska's case is filed in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia and challenges the roadless rule for other reasons, according to Lenhart.
We have raised a number of important legal issues that are completely different from the Wyoming case. Some of them are unique to Alaska, such as that we believe that the roadless rule violates two federal statutes, ANILCA and the Tongass Timber Reform Act, both of which are specific to Alaska.
TTRA and the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act define and govern the use of federal lands in southeast Alaska. The federal government has filed a motion to dismiss Alaska's case, and the parties in that lawsuit are awaiting a decision on the dismissal. A number of organizations have joined the suit on behalf of the state, including the Alaska Forest Association. Owen Graham is the timber industry group's executive director.
You know, I was hoping Wyoming would be successful so we wouldn't have to go forward with ours, but it looks like now we'll have to go forward. It's disappointing, but we've got to get rid of the rule.
Graham thinks Alaska's forests should be exempt from the nationwide rule and says the level of logging allowed on the eroded parts of the forest is not enough for industry to survive. The Supreme Court's decision is welcome news for environmental groups that have fought to uphold the Clinton-era law. Tom Waldo is an attorney with Earth Justice, a nationwide environmental law firm.
For more than 11 years, various parties like the state of Wyoming have been filing lawsuits trying to get the roadless rule thrown out, and with the Supreme Court's decision this week, they've been completely unsuccessful. The reason for that is that the roadless rule is a balanced rule that was adopted after a thorough and open public process that complied with all of the applicable laws.
Earth Justice has filed a motion to dismiss the Alaska case, arguing the state has missed the statute of limitations for challenging a federal rule. Waldo says the organization is confident and optimistic the district court in D.C. will uphold the roadless rule for the same reasons that appeal judges with the Ninth and Tenth Circuit courts have. Meanwhile, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals could also rule on whether the Tongass should be exempted from the nationwide rule. Plaintiffs and defendants in a separate case made oral arguments before the appeals court back in August. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
And that's all for Raven News, KCAW.